T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Welcome back to Overnight America. Big thanks to Paul Berry III who joined us at the end of last hour. You can go find that on the podcast. Joining us now is a public policy analyst, a professor of finance at Stockton University, Dr. Michael Bussler. Thanks for coming back on to Overnight America.
Well, thanks for having me, Ryan. As you know, it's my pleasure to be here.
You're always a great guest, and I got to say, during the break, I asked my producer, do we have the guest on the line? And he said, the bus is loaded. It's like, that's a pretty good way to introduce Dr. Michael Bussler. So I wanted to talk to you about a few different things, one of which is a survey that came out just recently, and they asked this pretty much every election. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? It's the common question, and for a lot of ways, it's like an economic barometer. And as it turns out, a lot of people, the majority of people say they are better off than they were 4 years ago. So I wanted to get your take on where you think the economy is compared to where it was 4 years ago. How do you think the American people are when it comes to the economy and the way it was 4 years ago, just based on what you saw from the survey?
Yeah, so just a little bit about that survey. It was first Ronald Reagan in 1980 that when he was running against Jimmy Carter, asked the American public, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And most said no, and he was elected. Since then, every sitting president has seen this survey done, and most of them, like for Clinton and Obama and Bush, they were in the mid-40s. So 56% is astounding, especially when you consider what the economy has gone through and is coming out of. So it just says that people realize, even with the bad conditions today, that really they were way better off under Trump than Obama. So where exactly are we today? So a little bit of the big picture. The economy started off this year doing exceptionally well. January and February looked great. In March, we had shut down the economy completely, and that dragged the whole first quarter down. April, the economy was shut down completely. That dragged down tremendously the second quarter. However, the federal government, Trump and Congress, passed a massive stimulus package, which was both a good idea and a bad idea. On the good idea, it put money into the hands of the unemployed, money into the hands really of every American, and gave some extra money to business. So the economy rebounded very sharply, and we were wondering whether a recovery would be a V-shape, bounce back quickly, or more of a U-shape, sort of drag at the bottom for a while before it came back. Turns out it's a sharp V, and we had 4 months of tremendous growth. Record-setting growth. Now, people say, well, how do you know that? They don't publish monthly growth figures. And that's true, they don't. So how did I judge that? Well, I think you can judge how the economy is growing by how many people went to work, how many new jobs were created. A little bit of a historical perspective. In a good economy, you create maybe 200,000 or 300,000 jobs in a month. The best we ever did was 1.6 million back during the Reagan administration. In the month of May, we added 2.8 million jobs, nearly doubling the previous record. The economy must be growing rapidly. In June, we added 4.6 million jobs. Again, the economy must be growing very rapidly. slowed down a little bit in April, 1.8 million, still a great number. July, 1.8 million. In August, 1.4 million. Now, it started to slow a little bit more in September. But I think that the third quarter of this year, and the growth figure will be out, I believe, next week, is going to show GDP, I figure, about 22% growth, which would be a record. The Atlanta Federal Reserve is projecting it could be as high as 30%. So either way, we're coming back very, very strong.
Wow.
It is starting to slow a little bit in September, and that can be fixed by one of two ways. One, we need a little more stimulus, which, again, is both a good idea and a bad idea. But if we get the stimulus, that'll keep the V-shaped recovery with a steep slope. I'm not so sure that's going to happen, since everybody seems to be fairly far apart. The House and the Senate, at least. The president is trying the best he can to make a deal. But I'm not so sure anything's going to happen. Maybe it will. The other way, and I think makes a little more sense, is there's about 8 or 10 states that are simply not reopening and are staying severely shut down. New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Michigan, California, Washington, Oregon. Those states, the governors, who coincidentally all happen to be Democrats, but the governors are very slow to reopen those states. Even though I understand the number of cases is going up and certainly the health is a concern, but the problem is if we stay shut down, if those states stay shut down much longer, you're going to have some long-term negative impacts on the economy and some very negative impacts on people's health. I mean, already... Mm-hmm. With so high unemployment, you're seeing anxiety, depression, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, domestic violence. Eventually, that's going to lead to suicide. So if those states can get open and do it safely and smartly, and we understand, you know, we're trying to balance everything here, but get those states up and running, and that'll keep the economy going. President Trump thinks next year could be one of the best years we've had ever. He may be right, because all the stage is really set for that. Regulations, counterproductive regulations have been pretty much eliminated. Tax rates have been lowered to give people an incentive to work and business an incentive to invest. And there's a lot of pent-up demand from everybody being shut down all this time. So, of course, we have an election coming up, and depending on who wins, that's going to have an impact on economics. But under the current policies, I think we're recovering very strongly. We lost 22 million jobs, and yet in 4 months, we added about half of them back already. Again, that's a remarkably robust recovery that we hope continues, and we have strong growth next year.
Yeah, let me tell you some of my fears. And joining us here is Dr. Michael Bussler. He's a professor of finance at Stockton University, public policy analyst. And we start to learn about some of the different ways that taxes could change under Joe Biden. Let's say he wins the office, and that you look at his tax plan, and you look at some of those states you mentioned, the ones that haven't fully opened the economy yet, the New Yorks, the New Jerseys, California, places like that. And we're looking at the high income earners. Upwards of what, 60 plus percent of their tax income would go towards taxes, and a lot of high end people and ones that have made something of themselves or whatever it is are very concerned. They're like, you got to be kidding, 60%. So let me point this out real quick. There's that old adage that, you know, I've never had a poor person offer me a job. What happens in those states, the ones that haven't opened back up, and then new tax policy goes in under Joe Biden where they take the top tax earner or the top earners, tax them 60%. What's going to happen to the job opportunities when you take that and then factor in the high taxes? What would that mean for their economic recovery?
It would be very bad. So people say, how do you come up with 60%? Well, what you're saying is they're likely to raise the top rate tax rate from the 36% it is now, probably somewhere in the mid-40s in order to pay for everything candidate Biden wants to do. And then the state of California already has a 13% income tax. That's going to have to go up, too. So you start adding that. And remember, you pay Social Security tax on some of your income and Medicare tax on some of your income and You know, there are hidden taxes you pay, too. You pay taxes on sales taxes when you buy things, property taxes on where you live. So you start adding all that up, and pretty soon you're paying over 60%, at least the higher income earners, in taxes. So what's going to happen? They're going to say, boy, I love living in California, but Texas is fairly similar climate, and I'm going to save a bundle by moving there. So you mm-hmm. see a lot of people, Florida's the same way. You see a lot of people leaving California, leaving New York State, moving to some of these states. Even New Jersey is going through it. They just raised the top bracket here from 9% up to 11%. People are starting to leave the state. You don't necessarily bring in more revenue by raising the tax rate. If you raise the rate and people leave and you have a lower base, the higher rate on a lower base probably gives you less money than if you had a lower rate and kept everybody there. So mm-hmm. what's going to happen is people will be leaving the state. California, New York City, too, is really in a disastrous situation. It really looks like a ghost town, and there are large numbers of restaurants that have closed, many of them say permanently. So how they're going to rebound from this, I'm not sure. They're going to look to the federal government, who also doesn't have any money. As I mentioned, those stimulus packages were a good idea and a bad idea. The bad idea part is the deficit for last year, fiscal 2020, which ended the end of September, was $3.1 trillion. That's more than double the worst deficit we ever had. Adds to the public debt, raises the public debt to $26 trillion. Annual GDP is only around 2021, so this far exceeds annual GDP. When that happens, most economists are worried about that. So these states, they're going to have a problem. They're going to look to the federal government. If Trump's reelected, he's going to say, look, the federal government doesn't have much money either. We really can't start paying all this. Now, if Biden wins, he's likely to be a little more sympathetic to these states. But still, the federal government's not going to be able to bail all these people out. They've got to get their economies going again, get them strong, get everybody working, get the revenue being generated, and then you can tackle all these other things. But if you keep the economy shut down, every day it's shut down is another day you're losing potentially millions of dollars, and you just can't keep doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other part of the taxing of the high income earners, and the cutoff point, 400,000 would be the cutoff point, is where they're looking at the hypotheticals based on the plans of Joe Biden. But think of it this way. If they leave the state, so do the jobs. So they're taking their business, packing up and going. And a lot of people in California have been doing that right now because they're just tired of the way it's being run. So think about that with all of the different states that are being run the way they are. And consider if we were to try to put into place something more on a federal level, a lot of different income states would a lot of income taxes would go out, and it's going to scare a lot of different people. In fact, a lot of jobs could be in jeopardy when we're trying to recover. But one other thing I wanted to ask you right before we go, and hypothetically speaking, if Biden wins or Trump wins, what do you think would happen immediately to the economy? Because some people say that if Donald Trump wins, you could see a big boost in the stock market. Some people say if Biden wins immediately, you'd see a big drop in the stock markets. Do you see a lot of shifting going on based on who wins the election immediately in November?
I'm not sure immediately, although there will be some reaction fairly quickly. The larger reaction will come next year when some of the policies are implemented. Look, if you, Biden wants to raise the corporate income tax from 21 to 28%. So that's, you're raising by one third the amount of taxes corporations have to pay. What that means is there's less for them to retain and less capital to finance growth, and we have a capital-intensive economy, so you need capital. You're raising taxes on the wealthy, says only people over 400,000. Problem is, that's only about 1.5% of the population. So you're going to have to raise taxes on more people in order to be able to raise the revenue that you need for all of the spending that you're incurring. So I think if Biden wins, corporations are going to say, hey, my profits are going to be going down. They're probably going to start regulating things. I don't know if it'll be a big drop right off the bat, although it is possible. I think more you would see a drop and kind of a stagnant stock market and stagnant business activity until they figure out exactly what he's going to get through. On the other hand, if President Trump wins, and in spite of what the polls say, I'm very confident that President Trump is going to pull this out. If he does win, and his policies are continued, the business community knows our corporate tax rate will stay low. They know the personal tax rate will stay low. They know that President Trump will probably move to reduce the capital gains tax rate also. And the last time that was done significantly, by the way, was under the Clinton administration when he lowered it from 28% to 20% in 1996. The next 4.5 years, we had the next 4 years, rather, we had 4.5% annual growth, 4.5% annual growth. They raised more tax revenue, were able to not only balance the budget, but run a surplus in the budget. And it looked like things were doing exceptionally well because that capital gains tax was reduced. Well, President Trump is talking about dropping that back to 15%. That, too, will create more capital. We have a capital-intensive economy. Creating more capital will lead to more growth. If Trump wins, I think you're going to see some very positive effects on the economy and on the stock market.
Yeah, and if those that are upset, and Joe Biden certainly, and some of the different people running along his side are very upset with the idea of dropping it and the way it was dropped during his tax cuts and, you know, reversing some of these tax cuts. I would say very simple indicator, look at the unemployment and what happened afterwards. We were seeing record unemployment before this COVID hit. So there are some very strong signs that, yes, that absolutely worked, because if the goal is to get people working, it worked. So Dr. Michael Bussler, if people wanted to find you online, some of the work you're doing, where can they look you up?
Sure. So two easy places. My Twitter account is @mbussler. I tweet out every one of my columns. I'd be happy if you followed me. If you have a Facebook page, search for Funding Democracy. Funding Democracy. And you'll see my page there. It's called Funding Democracy, The Economics of Freedom. Every one of my columns is there. And I, too, would be happy to see you follow me there.
Dr. Michael Bussler, it's great to get you on. You're such a great guest, and you're so good at explaining these things. Thanks for coming on to Overnight America.
Thank you. My pleasure. Look forward to doing it again.
Funding Democracy on social media. Look him up. Dr. Michael Bussler joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
St. Louis's weather station, KMOX.
Welcome back to Overnight America. So, good segment with Dr. Michael Bussler. We've had him on a few different times, and I'm always happy when he says, yes, I'll come back on your show. And I like how producer Mike prefaced it. Right during the news, we were listening, and I sent him a quick message and asked him, do we have the guest on the line? And he said, the bus is loaded. That's the way to do it. We're going to post that online, too, with some of the things we talked about last hour. In about 5 or 6 minutes from now, we're actually going to be talking to Robert M. Hardaway. He's the author of Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. I only had a chance to bring this up just briefly last hour, and I think it's worth bringing it again because it's one of the top stories at KMOX.com. And we're getting some national coverage with it, too. In the 1st Congressional District, Cori Bush is running as the Democratic candidate. And she puts out a tweet that says, if you're having a bad day, just think of all the social services we're going to fund after we defund the Pentagon. All right. So we're part of this culture where everything, we got to defund the military. We got to defund the police. We got to defund. We got to defund. And I thought, Governor Parsons said it best, and I'm going to read a quote from Governor Parsons' people. He said it's a conversation on our sister station, 97.1. He said, when you start talking about defunding police and defunding the military, it's a dangerous road to go down. The economy, that Fort Leonard Wood, that, well, think about this, even here in Missouri, the NGA site. We're going to be looking at them building, and think of all the money that's being invested in St. Louis as part of that National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. And they're trying to revitalize that entire area. And he points out, we're talking $30 billion worth of income to the state, 180,000 jobs. So then you have a candidate, Cori Bush, that says, defund the Pentagon. Get rid of that. All right. Seriously, I want you to go to those families that'll be making, you know, putting food on the table and then putting a roof over the head because they got a good paying job over at the NGA site and say, oh, no, we should defund that because we don't like it. You know, give me a break. So what a dumb thing to try to advocate for. and something that would seriously hurt not only our state, but our direct region here in St. Louis. Like, we have the ability to turn away good companies, good businesses that want to come in and invest in this community. Like, we have that sort of luxury right now to do something like that and discourage it. And, you know, what a strange thing to say when it's right there in your backyard. All right, so coming up next, I want to bring in our guest, Robert M. Hardaway, author of Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. Since it is an election year, a lot of times you find, oh, why do we even need the Electoral College? Why do we even use it? Oh, boy. Okay, well, we're going to talk to someone who has been an advocate for it in trying to save things. And I had conversations with him in the past. Robert Hardaway joins us next. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Overnight America is live with you tonight up until midnight, replay hours afterwards, and then you can find the podcast in the KMOX.com podcast section or KMOX.com/ONA. Joining us now, a author, Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy, Robert M. Hardaway. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you for having me.
We really enjoyed the conversation last time you were on, so I'm glad that we get some time to bring you back on, mostly because we're getting close to that November election date, and sometimes this is a point of discussion, mostly because people always wonder, do we need the Electoral College? And certainly on the night of the election, let's say, hypothetically, we see what happened in 2016, where Donald Trump takes more states, wins the Electoral College, but somehow Joe Biden wins the popular vote or something like that. And then, of course, there's the big uproar. Why do we need the Electoral College? See, he stole it, this and that. So I think it's good for you to come on and make the case and talk about why we have the Electoral College and why it works.
Well, for one thing, right off the bat, the notion that there is a popular vote is actually misconceived. Many people still believe that when they go into the voting booth, they're actually voting for a presidential candidate. Of course, they're not. They're voting as they do in England. You vote for a member of parliament who then goes to parliament and then votes for the leader. It works the same way here. You vote for an elector who goes to the Electoral College to elect the president. But there's no popular votes for a individual candidate. People are still under that misconception. So they need to take a close look at their ballot. There's no popular vote for this National Popular Vote Interstate Compact to base their popular vote allocation on.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And part of this, too, there's a lot of hypotheticals of what could happen between now and then, and some states have decided to take it on their own. When it comes to the faceless electors, the ones that decide to flip it, even if their state and the people on the state voted a certain way for a certain candidate. So you start to see even elected officials that try to push back on the system that's in place right now. The Electoral College and the reason it was put together, I'm hoping you can give a little bit of history, the background of why it was set up the way it was set up.
Well, for one thing, we wouldn't have the United States of America today if the Grand Compromise hadn't been entered into by our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention. At the time of the Constitutional Convention, very few people thought that these colonies could ever get together and form one united country. It was almost inconceivable. And even George Washington said, I'll come to this thing, but reluctantly, because I don't think there's any chance, because the small states are forming their own country. The big states are forming their own country. The South is forming their own country. And it was only at the last minute, really, that the Grand Compromise was achieved, because the small states said, we're not going to enter a union unless we have each state has equal suffrage, equal representation in the Congress. And the large states said, no way. It has to be one person, one vote. It has to be based purely on population. And it was only at the last minute that the Grand Compromise was achieved, which brought them all together in one country. And the elements of that Grand Compromise were, first, that there'd be an upper house in which it would be based on one state, one vote, and then the lower house based purely on population, and that in the election of a president, the election of the president, the weight that each state gets would be based on the two electoral votes, in part, the two electoral votes that each state is allocated based on their equal representation in the Senate. And that cannot be abrogated unless every state agrees. It's the only provision in the entire Constitution which cannot be amended by constitutional amendment. If you look at the last sentence of Article 5, you cannot take away every state's equal representation in the Senate, upon which each state's representation and weight in the Electoral College and presidential elections is based. So it's really political theater to talk about abolishing the Electoral College, because you can't do it unless every state agrees. And that's simply not going to happen. Wyoming is not going to give up their weight in the Electoral College. It's just not going to happen. But it sounds good. It's good political theater. It's been going on for about 200 years. Every 10 years or so, one party or the other wants to, quote, abolish the Electoral College. Back in 1960, it was Republicans who wanted to get rid of it because they thought that it favored Democrats somehow. And indeed, in 1960, according to the New York Times and the Congressional Quarterly, it was Kennedy who won the electoral vote, but Nixon that won the popular vote. So this happens all the time. The members of the Constitutional Convention, the Founding Fathers, knew it would happen, and that's why they put in this one provision in Article 5 that says you can't eliminate equal suffrage in the Senate, upon which the Electoral College is based, unless every state agrees.
Mm-hmm. What you see online, different graphics, memes, things like that, they love to take a picture of the United States broken down into different counties and districts, and then they like to make them blue and red, and they would say, do you really want these small sections of blue representing the rest of this country? So you look at the high volumes of population in places like California and New York and Chicago, places that vote predominantly blue, and they look at that and they say, these type of cities should be able to dictate how the rest of the country governs themselves. So forget about what the individual states' rights or the way that each state would be able to govern in a way that would be best representing the people that are inside of it. So let's just say hypothetically the Electoral College went away. What would be the danger for, like, say, the Midwest here if we were to just go based on the whims of these large pockets of populations on the coast?
Well, it's interesting. The last time there's been several serious attempts to abolish the U.S. Senate and the Electoral College, upon which is based on the equal suffrage in the Senate. But it was actually John F. Kennedy in his famous speech in 1956 in the Senate who anticipated this. He said, if we do the so-called popular vote system, which is the system in Russia, by the way, a lot of people love Russia, and they think it'd be great to have a so-called popular vote election. And he says, if we did that, it would increase the likelihood of a president being elected by a minority of the people. I'll explain that in a minute. It would break down the federal system under which the states entered the union, which provides a system of checks and balances that ensures that no area, and I underscore area, or group shall obtain too much power. So he understood this. You can't have a country as large as the United States govern sustainably unless you have representation from all over the country. And he quoted Madison: "This government is not completely consolidated under our Constitution, nor is it entirely federal. But who are the parties to it? The people, not as the people comprising one great massive body, but the people comprising 13 sovereignties." So he understood it. And if we did have a so-called Russian system, if you look at past elections, you can see what would have happened. In 1960, we still wouldn't know who the president was, because if we'd had an NPVIC back then who said we're going to count the popular votes instead, no one could agree on how you count them. How do you count popular votes cast, for example, electors who are unpledged to any particular candidate? There's no way to count the popular vote. And that's why we have the system, which is the envy of the world. We have a system very similar to the Electoral College in England. People say, Electoral College in England? I thought they had a parliament. Yes, they call their Electoral College a parliament. But it works exactly the same way. You elect members of parliament who then go to the parliament, and then they vote for the leader. The only difference between our Electoral College and the parliament in England is that the founding fathers wanted three separate branches of government, three branches of government that would be checks and balances on each other. And in England, you have the legislature electing the president. So you really only have two branches of government, their parliament, which does two functions, elects their leader and legislation. So you combine the two parts of the government. So the founding fathers wanted to separate that. That's why we have an electoral college. And that's why we have been so successful with stable governments for the last 200 years. Mm. We're kind of the envy of the world, and we take it for granted.
Do you mind holding on after the break? I have some more questions for you on this. And I think that this could be part of a bigger trend that we see with some of the far progressive style candidates that get into office. And what you hear them say is, you know, forget about the Electoral College. They want to rip up the Constitution. And it's so dangerous because it's the same mindset. And I wanted to ask you about that. So Robert M. Hardaway, we'll continue our conversation with him. He's the author of Saving the Electoral College: Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. You can find his book online now. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
And Overnight America continues. And I got to say, I'm a fan of Robert Hardaway and the way he explains this in his book, Saving the Electoral College: Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. I think it is an important system that we have and we should uphold. I do have some more questions for you, and thanks for sticking around, Robert. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So let's say we look at some of the more progressive candidates, the ones that would advocate not only abolishing things like, you know, the Electoral College, but then they go even further and they say we need to rip up the Constitution and start from scratch. Some of the candidates even go as far as saying that we don't even need a Constitution. In fact, we don't even need anything. We can just do whatever we want, you know, type of mindset. So let's just say hypothetically we were starting from scratch. And I'm looking at this as a way to be more of a thought exercise. So let's say you were one of the founding fathers, or even today, even if we're just founding the country today in 2020. How would you pitch to people why we need the Electoral College opposed to some of these other systems that people want to see? And what would you say if we were starting from scratch? This is the reason why we should do the Electoral College.
Well, there's a reason why the founding fathers wanted an Electoral College. If you look at other countries that don't have one, for example, in Russia, they have this so-called popular vote system, and you get three or four parties. The French have adopted the Russian system, by the way. And if you look at what happened in 2017, it was a total tragedy. The two major parties got nudged out by a couple of percentage points. Everyone said, well, they're the two major parties, but they got nudged out by 2% each. And so you had one candidate, Macron, that got 21%. You had a extremist group that got 22%. So then there was a so-called runoff. And in a runoff, you get the illusion that you're going to get somebody who's supported by 50%. But in fact, in France, the eventual winner, Macron, was opposed by two-thirds of the electorate. And so they ended up electing somebody who only had 23% support. And there was over 1 million voters that expressed their outrage at that undemocratic system. Over 1 million voters cast blank ballots, basically saying this Russian system is an outrage to democracy. And it was. And that's not something that we want now, and it's certainly not what the founding fathers had envisioned back then. We wouldn't have the United States of America at all if we had not entered into this compromise based on equal suffrage in the Senate and upon which the Electoral College is based. So the founding fathers looked ahead and they saw that demagogues within the future tried to dismantle the whole federal system. And that's why they put in this sort of poison pill that says you can't abrogate the equal suffrage in the Senate unless every state agrees, because that is the basis for presidential elections in the Constitution. You can't eliminate one without the other. And that's why some Democratic demagogues today actually advocate, because they understand you have to eliminate the Senate first, and then the Electoral College would fall, because that's part of the grand compromise.
Wow. And that's right. And that's what you see. They want to see a fall of all of those the systems in place.
Well, they say that
ripping the Constitution off.
They say the Senate is a violation of the one person, one vote principle. And in a way, they're correct in this sense, that the voters in Wyoming can elect two senators and California only gets two as well. And they say, well, this is a violation. No, that is federalism, because we wouldn't have the United States of America if we didn't have a federal system. If we had not had this grand compromise that gave every state equal suffrage in at least one of the branches of the United States, there wouldn't be a United States. We'd be like South America. And we were headed that way. The grand compromise was only approved in the Constitutional Convention by one single vote. If we hadn't done that, we would have gone the way of South America. There would be, no United States of America, because the founding fathers recognized, as John F. Kennedy did in 1956, when he made the point, you can't rule a country, govern a country with the geographic extent of the United States, just by having a small group or population center, for example, in the coasts, rule the whole hinterland of the country. It's not sustainable. It cannot hold together. We're very lucky we have it, that the founding fathers had that vision.
You know, I know that a lot of people coming up in just a couple of Tuesdays from now, and it's hard to believe that the general election is on November 3rd, less than 2 weeks away at this point. We're going to have the last presidential debate tomorrow, and then it's all in, and everyone making their final pushes. So on that night, November 3rd, when people start to make the argument that, oh, look at this, we need to get rid of this. This is an outdated system, and they're all complaining about how we vote, and we have to go into a polling place, and some states do it different than others. And, you know, everyone's just kind of like trying to find everything to complain about based on every system that's in place already. So let's say someone is encountered by this with maybe someone they know or on social media, things like that, and people start complaining about it. What would be the easiest down-to-earth way for someone to explain the Electoral College and why it's a good thing? Because I've asked it a couple of different ways historically speaking, and I know that, at least for my sake, you got to dumb it down sometimes, because I need a way to dumb it down. And so how would you explain it to a 16-year-old in order to have them be on board?
I'd explain it the same way I would explain to a 16-year-old in England who says, I don't understand parliament. We elect members of parliament, then they go to the parliament and they elect the leader. I don't understand that. And I had, when I went to England several years ago, and they said, don't send those demagogues that you get over the United States over here. They want to dismantle our whole parliament, because their electoral college works in exactly the same way. Our system is very, very simple. Each state can allocate its electoral votes as it wishes. And since 1876, every state in the union has said, we're going to let the people of the state vote for the electors. who then go to the Electoral College and vote for the president. And once every 100 years or so, it doesn't jive with a supposed hypothetical Russian-style popular vote. And that happens in parliamentary democracies, too. That doesn't mean it's not legitimate. And they say, don't send those people over here that would want to dismantle our parliament, which has been evolving for the last 1,000 years. You've got your own little separate parliament for the executive, electing the executive, so that you have three separate branches of government with checks and balances. That's why we've sustained our government for so long and been the envy of the world.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out, it's good to know that we are represented locally as opposed to nationally, because if that was the case, Missouri would never get any love. And how many other states out there? And that's important. So, by the way, if people wanted to find your work, your book, and find you online, where can they go?
Well, you can go to Amazon. It's Saving the Electoral College, How the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. And I've explained that it would elect somebody with a very small percentage of the vote. John F. Kennedy understood that. And he said it would be horrible if you try. But in a way, I tried to get my publishers to change the name, because I say we don't need to save the Electoral College. I think it's perfectly safe under the last sentence of Article 5, which says that you can't take away equal suffrage in the Senate, upon which every state's weight in the Electoral College is based, unless every state agrees. But it makes for good political theater, and this is the first time in a long time that people have actually been interested, but they've forgotten what they learned in fourth grade civics, that when you go into the voting booth, you're voting for electors. You're not voting for a candidate. There is no popular vote to base base this national popular vote interstate compact on. It simply doesn't exist. If you ask them, how would you count popular votes for unpledged electors? They just throw up their hands and they say, well, we would disenfranchise all those millions of voters. That happened in 1960 in Alabama. They voted for unpledged electors. And today, if you ask the MPVIC advocates that are basically financed by some multimillionaires on the coast who want to, you know, force us into the Russian election system, which has been so catastrophic all around the world it's been tried.
Yeah, Robert M. Hardaway, I got to say, thank you for coming on before the election. I'm glad we had a chance to do this, and check out his book, Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. He joins us on the Quiver River Electric Gets Line on Overnight America KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.